Hey, family, I just want to let you know right now, I am totally excited. As you know, we've done things called how-tos, different things. Now we're doing how to buy a car. You know, that's something that some people, that's sometimes your biggest purchase in many situations. So we're going to go over this. But then look, I'm giving myself and I'm giving you a hand already. I'm bringing in a dear friend of mine. His name is Charles Gaskin. I've known him for over 30 years. He has been blessing people in the area of car buying and also in their financial management. You see, that's why he's here today, and doing them together. Can everybody give Charles a hand? And then Charles, anything else you want to add?
Just call me the car guy.
That's right. He's a blessing, the car guy. He has blessed so many people. If we sat right now and said all the people he's blessed with cars, not only individuals, pastors, just people, he has just been a blessing. He and his wife has started a business called the Christian Car Buying Network, and they have blessed so many people with cars. And then sometimes there are people that were in a different situation where they were able to help them in their area of budgeting, finance, getting out of debt from many of my early, I don't want to sound old school, the millionaire training book and everything like that. So, hey, let's just get right into it. Charles, can you just, I just want you to demystify for us just a little bit. Many of us just don't understand just the car buying process. Could you just walk us through that, Charles?
That's a great question, George. Obviously, car buying, you'll probably buy 3, 4, maybe 5 cars in your lifetime, hopefully a couple of houses. As you said, some of the largest purchases we will make in our lives. So to know how to do it is such an important thing. When you're going into a dealership, what you should know, what you should look out for, and the things you should do prior to going in to purchasing a car. You know, a lot of people walk in, and when I talk to people, I tell them, try to keep your emotions out of the car buying process. Because dealerships thrive on emotionalism. And we'll go over that during this conversation. But you know, you walk in, know your credit, know your history, know what you can spend. I remember back in the day when you used to do millionaires in training, one of the things you taught was you shouldn't be having a car payment more than you tithe. That was a good point.
So, right. So in buying a car, when we're buying cars, like what's kind of the process? Like you come in, like you just come in one and you just purchase, what's kind of like the process that you go?
Well, I'm going to go through the process two ways. I'll go through it one way as a customer. When you walk in, like I said, know before you go. You know what you're looking for, know what you want to spend, and try to stay within that gap. Look at the car, test drive the car, have the car checked out if it's a used car, know your financing. If you can get financing before you go, that's the best thing. Credit unions, Navy Federal, Capital One, get your financing set up before you go, and I'll give you the reasons why for that. But then when you walk into a dealership, you have to remember, these are professionals. These are people who do this for a living. I'm not here to bash car dealerships or say anything bad about them, but they are professional at making money and making the money that comes out of your pocket. So their goal is to get you to become emotional and to meet and greet. They want to test drive you, qualify you, and close you. That's why you have so many stages in the car dealership, where you have the salesman, then you have the sales manager, then you have the general manager, then the finance manager. All of these departments in a car dealership are set up to make as much money as possible.
All right, great. So I'm just going to repeat that so I get a little bit of clarity. When you come in, you typically talk to a salesperson. Then after you talk to a salesperson, then you talk to a financing person, right? And then after you talk to that, is there some like a closing?
Well, generally what you do is you'll talk to a salesperson. Then if the salesperson can't close you, the manager or the general manager come in and close you. And then you'll talk to the finance manager, where you'll get hit with after sales. Like your warranty packages and your wheel and tire packages and paint packages. I mean, there's such an assortment of profit making things that you get hit with afterwards. So you went in and you were at 300. Next thing you're at 425. And you're like, how did I get to 425?
So, Charles, you said that was one side. Now, the flip side is from the dealership side.
Correct.
I guess
the dealership side, the dealership side is essentially to set you up to make the most money. And I'm not knocking cars. They're in the business to make money. That's their job. I mean, they don't go there for free. You know, salesman has to get paid. The finance manager has to get paid. The general manager has to get paid. That's one of the reasons these new car buying services online mm-hmm. have become so popular, where you just go online, pick out the car, and they drop it off at your house. Unfortunately, right. a lot of these guys, these companies are not, let me say, they're not really going over the used cars that they're selling. So a lot of people are getting used cars that haven't been put through the shop, are not mechanically sound, maybe don't have good tires. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful of what you're buying.
Yeah,
like I said, know before you go.
That's good. So now we saw from the consumer side, and then we also see from the dealership side. But now what we want to do is go through things that you should know. So I'm going to try to everybody. My goal today is to get this at least 7 things you should know before you purchase a car.
Freezing the process is probably the best thing. Go as slow as possible. Don't let anyone rush you into a decision. A lot of times dealerships try to make it like, oh, if you don't take it today, you can't have that deal. So again, mm-hmm. knowing before you go to that dealership and understand, I'm not in a rush. Mm-hmm. And I'm not anxious for anything. I mean, the worst is don't be anxious for anything. So when you walk into a dealership, a lot of times in my relationship, I would play good cop, bad cop. Mm. So if you went in with your wife, she's the no person to everything. Even if she likes the car, she's the no person to everything. And you're the maybe person. This way, there's at least that battle back and forth where you can negotiate and get a better deal. And
I actually did that. The second car I bought, I took one of my best buddies with me, and we did the same mm-hmm. thing. I told him, okay, you're the one I got to discuss everything with, mm-hmm. so they can't make a decision wisdom. Right away.
No, I got to discuss. And your friend said, no. And again, that's just helping you get the better deal at the end of the day, because they're set up to make money. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not knocking the process of making money, but unfortunately, people of color are taken advantage of, and we pay sometimes twice as much for vehicles as other nationalities. So you have to be very careful, because this money is your future. This is money that can be saved, that can be invested, that can be sown. So you want to make sure you're careful in what you do.
I can imagine that if you look at any given person's, their monthly budget, the car payment can be one of the bigger ones in there. So what you end up having is your car payment affects what you can do, with the rest of the money that comes in during the month. So you definitely don't want that to to eat up so much of your budget that other goals can't be achieved, right?
Yeah. And like you say, when you walk into a dealership, so many times I've seen people walk into a dealership and, because of emotionalism, walk in at $300 and walk out at over $500.
Wow.
Because they became emotionally attached to a vehicle. And next thing you know, they were sold this, they were sold that, they were sold this. And in that spur of the moment, they signed the contract that locked them in for 5 or 6 years. What can you do from there? At a payment, just becomes ridiculous. The other thing I tell people also, and it's one of the things that people sometimes miss out on, actually two things, which are, what's your insurance cost going to be? I've seen so many people come in, we sit down, we work a deal together, they call their insurance company, and they're in insurance shock. Because the insurance payment sometimes, because of their driving.
And now your total car costs are actually up. Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Georgia just went up, from what I'm told, substantially on insurance, because apparently Georgia is one of the worst places to drive in the country. Mm-hmm. And their insurance rates just went up substantially on a lot of customers. So to check out your insurance before you go and purchase the car. One of the other things, like I said, interest, getting the loan from a private bank yourself. This way you walk in with a blank bank check, because a lot of people don't know a lot of simple things of interest.
Yeah.
And I believe George teaches an excellent class on amortized loans.
So, Charles, how do you help somebody? So there's so many cars out there, you know, choices to pick from. And one of the challenges to avoid getting emotionally attached to a car when you come to the dealership is how do you do that research ahead of time to identify, you know, a more focused approach when you go into the dealership?
Well, you know, we live in the information age now. YouTube, online, Google, there's so many avenues that you can actually literally research a vehicle and get a full breakdown of the vehicle. You can go and research Auto Trader and all the other things to see the quality of the vehicle, what they say about how lasting and the repairs and what it's going to take to upkeep that vehicle. So before you go, you know what you're getting into. George and I know, you know, a lot of people want high-end vehicles, but high-end vehicles also come with high-end cars. You know, you have a Hyundai. You can get a Hyundai tire for $50, $60 brand new. You get an expensive European car, you could be paying $250 to $500 per tire now. Yes. So, you know, oil changes become more, brake jobs become more. So, you know, a lot of times when you have to separate need and want.
Oh, he's preaching now. Go ahead.
You know, there's things that I want, but there are things that I need. And you can't let them cross over, because at the end of the day, it's about how much money can you keep, because a car is a depreciating asset. No matter what you do, it's going to be basically worthless after a certain amount of time. So how much do you want to invest in that vehicle at the end of the day, knowing that it's going to depreciate? So when you're going, like you say, look online, watch a video about the car. Today's YouTube videos on every car made, they have a YouTube video. If they don't have 50, it's not enough. Go to car shows in your area. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best things. New York Auto Show, Philadelphia Auto Show. California has a great auto show, Atlanta Auto Show. All these states, you know, at the beginning of the year, they're going to get back into it because of COVID. They had stopped it, but now they're going to go back into having auto shows. Go walk around, sit, feel, touch, smell the car. But again, don't get caught up in emotions. Yeah, I know you got into that Bentley. Nice car. All handmade, beautiful, looks good. Saw it in the video. But the video guy that you saw him driving, he didn't even own it. He only rented it for the video.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's very prevalent in that. And no, that's really good what you said about knowing the car and everything like that, and test driving it and understanding more about the car. Those are really, really important. So if it's okay, can we go into financing a little bit next? Because we want to do that before we go into the car, because we shouldn't even be looking at cars. Like what you said about the $50 for certain tires and everything is that, you know, I drive an electric vehicle and I didn't know that my tires were soundproof. Like that they have my tires are certain, they're run flat, but there's foam inside the tires so they don't make noise when they're driving. So I found that out when I went to go get them fixed, and they let me know that $450 number as well. Or they do that whole $375, but then by the time you load it, balance it, put it on there and align it with the other one, you're in that $450, and then that is leaning towards five.
And you usually have to buy two at a time.
So we're gonna go back into something. So we get our second point is this, is that
wait a minute, before you said something and I want to touch on that before we jump off. Just so you know, also the issue with those high-end tires, not everybody carries them. So if you happen to get a flat in the wrong place, you might be stuck while they try to find a tire for your car.
Right. So everyone, the word for number two is total cost of ownership. You have to really understand that number, because you find that like with the different things. And then, but you said oil change and everything. So you have electric cars, but you don't have oil change, but then you have other maintenance. So you want to make sure you understand the maintenance and everything of that and the complete.
The other thing we talked about earlier was insurance, right? Like taking into account, knowing that part of your car cost that you're adding on by getting the car is the insurance, and getting a sense of what that'll be. Because again, your total car cost is all of those things stacked together.
Right. Yeah. Car payment and insurance. Right.
We talked about car payment, but also call your insurance company so you know what the insurance is on the car, because that's on top and above the car payment. And in some cases, I've sat in front of people who, because of their driving record, when we call the insurance company, the insurance payment monthly was more than the car payment.
Wow.
Then they start calling friends. Can I put you on my, can you put me on your insurance? Like,
oh, by zip code or something, right?
Yeah.
Or something like where you live.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Gotcha. Thomas, you want to do next question, or do can we go back to financing? Or?
Well, we're going into financing now.
Yes.
Let's go into financing.
All right. Let me ask my just first basic question, and you already know I know the answer to this one, but I'm going to ask it for everybody else. Is this, before you go on a car dealership, before you go look at a car, what's the first thing you should do? What's the first thing you should do, Charles, before you even
know your think credit. About
if you want a Bentley or a Toyota? Go ahead.
Know your credit. First, know your credit.
All
don't
right.
go to a car right. dealership. You don't know how many times I see this person walks in, they're looking at a $50,000 car, and unfortunately their credit said they couldn't even get a motorized skateboard.
Right. Credit so bad, don't take your cash. Right. You know, so here we go.
Yeah.
So they should know your credit, and then if there's a challenge with your credit, then we want to fix it now.
Fix it.
And do now. It before you go there. Gotcha. All right. Know your credit score.
There is a caveat to that, because you do have people who are in need of a car for transportation. In places like Georgia, you can't get around without a car.
Yeah.
So my advice to people who actually need a car to get around is don't go past $10,000-$12,000, because you're automatically going to get hit with a ridiculous interest rate. And because of that interest rate, the more car you buy, the worse the compound interest over time becomes. So if you can get a $10,000 car and your payment's around $300 a month because of interest, you could pay four paying to the principal. And George can go over that. He knows what we're talking about. Whereas you can bring down the interest on the car, but at least you'll be able to rebuild your credit in a short time, a year or so, with that car and get out of that car and move into something else.
That's really good. And then also, everybody, then just not trying to plug anything, but as you guys know, we have the 21-day fast start. So there's also things we can also learn as far as with our credit and then getting it. But that paying down the principal earlier, if you have a $400 payment, then paying an extra $100 a month, then you're paying down the principal and you're also going to start building your credit. So then we want to start going through that process. So, okay, got it. So after we have the credit, then what's the next thing we want to do financing wise that before we go on to the lot and pick out a car?
Well, then we would talk about, you know, going to banks, going to credit unions to get a loan before you go. But again, that comes knowing what you're going to spend and staying within that budget that you set up. You know, maybe federal and all local federal. Right now, credit unions are actually giving better rates than banks. So
yes, they all. To me, they always have.
They really have. You know, but there were times you could get 0% back in the day when they really wanted to get rid of cars. You know, the manufacturer's specials. But you know, like you said, credit unions are much better. I actually had a gentleman purchase a car. He said, "Acts of stories." He purchased a car. He didn't purchase it from me. It was in Philadelphia. He came to me to get out of the car. His interest rate was 22%. And literally told him, "I can't get you out of the car, but what I want you to do when you get back to Philly, join the credit union and get that." He called me for the next year thanking me because they dropped his interest rate to 8%.
Right. Do you guys know the difference between 22 and 8?
8. Big difference. So even if you have a finance car now, and you have the possibility and you have a major note still, look at a credit union to refinance your car.
Yeah, we've always done really well with the credit union. And most credit unions, you just need to hold an account there. Sometimes you could have like $5 in a checking account there, and now you're a member of the credit union. And then you get all the benefits that come with it. So we've done, you know, a lot of, I think every single car we've done is the same credit union.
Excellent.
Yeah. One other thing about that, then we'll go to the next step. After we get the finances, this credit unions are owned by the members.
Right.
They're owned by the members. Like, you're the owner of that. then I'm just naming the names, but like Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, those are owned, those are publicly traded, those are owned by shareholders. So their goal is to make money for the shareholders. If you're a, that's why credit unions are typically less. That's why one of our financial, also our financial tip or just for, in doing that also is you should have a credit union for all of that stuff. It's for cars. And then even you even look at them for mortgages as well. But there's a good way to build relationship also with them in doing that. Okay. So then let's say someone says I'm qualified for, now they find out they're qualified for X amount. What do they do next then Charles?
Now we scour the internet, whether you're buying new or used, find the car that you want. New cars, you can actually find out the manufacturer's cost online very easily.
You can.
Used cars are subject to the market value. Unfortunately, over the past couple of years, used cars skyrocketed because of the shortage of cars, and people were getting overcharged for used cars because of the shortage in the market. And understand, not only was there a shortage of, in the market, we also had disasters in the United States where states got flooded and all the cars that were in those states, thousands of cars had to be replaced. So at the same time we were having a shortage, you had cars being damaged, and you have to be very careful not to accidentally purchase one of these cars because a lot of people will try to refurbish these cars and put them back on the market. So one of the other things that I want to talk about is how to get a car inspected, especially a used car.
So, yeah, let's go into that for our third topic. Yeah.
Let's talk about that right now, and then we're adding that to the next tip. Go ahead. How do you get the car inspected?
Well, I'm about to do an advertisement for a company and not get paid for it. There's a company online called the Lemon Squad. They're all over the United States. I'm going to have to charge them for this endorsement. But they call the Lemon Squad. You look them up online. But what they do is they literally send a professional mechanic who understands paint work and understands the mechanics of the car. They will see if he will go out and inspect the car, test drive it for you, and independently give you a rating on that car and what needs to be done. It's a beautiful thing.
Lemon Squad. Yeah, but first of all, two things about that. Number one, that's a really good business, and you guys understand like how to do things. Is that like if you see a need, you should open up a business that does that. That's like a great example. I went like right when you said Lemon Squad, I went, I'm so mad I didn't think of that. Not I'm mad, but I mean like I want them to do good. But I'm like that's a really good idea. And then I know you gave me the same quote, but we want to do this is that whatever they charge, I don't know what they charge, but we want to look at what their rates are.
$100.
That is still cheaper.
$100.
Oh, $100. Okay, but what I'm saying is, That's cheaper than getting a bad car and then paying thousands and thousands of dollars in that. And then also you can, and this is true with homes too, is you can take back the report that they give, and then can't you help negotiate that with pricing? Like they say, hey, the tires are really worn. Then say, okay, well, hey, we're at this price, or back to your illustration from earlier, or put new tires on it too for the same price.
Right.
Like how do you negotiate? What can you do with an inspection? Hey, everybody, said something. What do you do with the inspection? I'm sorry. I got excited.
That's okay.
What
do you do with the inspection? You literally just said it. If the tires are worn, you can pay. I need new tires. This is the price you want. I want tires on the car. If this is the price you want, there's some damage on the inside. Maybe the vents are broken or there's missing parts on the car. You'd be surprised. You know, get these cars and there are things missing on the car. So you can insist on getting these things repaired or replaced before you purchase the car. Now you're not into a car with, there's a word that we use in the car industry. It's called Baldini Maypop. Tires Baldini that are so bald.
Repeat that word.
Baldini Maypops. The tires Baldini are so Maypop. Bald.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The tires are so bald, they may pop.
I'm gonna use that. I just think of the ball, Danny Maypop. I'm gonna make a little song, but I'm gonna think of the ball.
When you see people on the highway, you now be checking out the tires. Oh, he got a set of Baldini Maypops on there because people don't take care of their cars. Even though as important as tires are to cars, you'll see people driving around on what we call Baldini Maypops. So let's move on.
Yeah. And but you want to, but the reason why, but I want to, let's be serious. My pastor role came back on, but just we want to also make sure that when it's you in the car and your family and your children, you want to make sure you have the proper tires. That's why you want to have an inspection. So after you get an inspection and then you find out, so you found a car, you're qualified now. Then you did an inspection on the car and then you found out certain things need to be fixed or that, and they either need to lower the price. Cause see, remember that old certified, when they say they're certified and things like this, they went through some tests. We want to make sure they did that. So then we want to either do that or we say we want to look into the car. So what do we do after we do the inspection, Charles?
Well, if the inspection comes back clean, now obviously you're going to go in. You already have a agreed upon price. No, they're still going to try to sell you on their own bank after that. Because their price may not include the warranty. But your credit union might actually offer warranties. Some insurance companies offer warranties. So know that too, that your insurance company may offer a bumper-to-bumper warranty, or your credit union may offer a bumper-to-bumper warranty. You don't have to take the dealership's bumper-to-bumper warranty. Really?
Gotcha. Sure, let me go one more place, and I'm going to come back to that. So what about like cost car buying, things like Costco, AAA, things like that? Are those better pricing, or is it better for you to get your own financing and come in and negotiate? Which one of those are better? Or like,
well, don't forget, there's other Costco like still leaves you open to the dealership's financing. Costco is only about the price of the car. So now it still
leaves you open. Okay, good, good. Let's go back. Gotcha. This is, you guys, this is so helpful. This is helpful. All right. So now what does a bank, when you go to the car dealership, their financing, they have a rate, then they charge you a different rate. Like, how does the financing work at the dealership? And hey, by the way, everybody, this is at least a couple of them right here. Go ahead. How does the financing work at the dealership?
Well, financing, fortunately, the government has stepped in to curtail the aggressive overcharging of financing. But every dealership has the ability to add to the buy rate, which is the rate that you get from the bank, at least 2.5 to 3%. So if you got a 6% rate, they have the ability to add 2 points on and sell you an 8% rate or 8.5% rate. Now, it doesn't look like much, but over a 5-year, 6-year, now they have 7-year loans. That could be $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, depending on the cost of the car.
You can get a seven-year loan on a car?
Yes.
You can get a seven-year loan on a car?
84 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's new knowledge.
That's how, I guess.
That's the world of the new.
They lengthen the time so your car payment is lower. Oh, so then you might be buying more car than you should be buying.
Right, so now,
because what I've found is a lot of times before people study up on this, they're very focused on the payment as opposed to the total cost of the car. And so the dealer knows that, and they're going to say, because every time I've ever gone, they always ask me, what's the payment range that you're focused on? Instead of what amount do you need? You know, your budget is the monthly payment, because then they can work with that and they can put whatever, you know, they need to in there, or they can lengthen it out. That you're paying for more car, but it seems like it's a smaller.
You don't even want to know how many times I've seen people walk into a dealership at a payment range, and instead of 5 years, they go out at 6 years or 6.5 years or 7 years. Because
6.5 years.
Yeah,
wow.
6.5, 72 months. They literally keep going until they're like, okay, this is the payment I want to be at, and that's the car I want. That's that emotionalism again, because now they got you on payment and not on price. Mm-hmm. Then they rush you through the contract price, mm-hmm. the contract, and they sign here. And generally, unfortunately, the thing you need to read, which is the final contract, you're so tired by signing so many papers, you don't even look at the final contract. All you look at is the payment. And your $30,000 car is now $55,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And just when you said it in the 7 years, I just wanted to say psychologically, sometimes when people buy a 7-year payment, that moves back in the mortgage range because I think they say, I'm never actually going to pay this car off. That I'm just going to do this for 3 or 4 years and then come back and then get another car. But then the residual value and the ability to sell it because they paid more for a car during the pandemic because of, remember, they didn't have the chips. They paid more. So then their payment was 500. Then it went to 700. When they come back in 4 years, it's going to go to 900. Then they may move into the position where they can't buy a car. So that's why it's so important that you learn this knowledge so you can come in and get a car properly. And then you switch down to leasing.
Go ahead. One of the things that you were just talking about, just so I could cover that for you, George, is because you paid so much for the car, when you come back in 3 or 4 years and say, I want to trade it, and you have what's called negative equity, which means you owe more than the car is worth. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is, the dealership, depending on your credit, they can take that amount and add it to the car that you're buying. So now you're paying for two cars at the same time. You got into a new car, but you're still paying for the old one and you're paying for the new one, and you can never get out from under that.
I'm going to repeat it again a different way with real estate and doing it, but it's like refinancing a car. Two cars together. Is what you're saying. We're saying the same thing in a different way. But I just didn't look at it that way till you said it. This, I don't know if this is helping anybody out there, but type in the chat if this is helping you, if you're out here watching. This is helping me. Because
you're blessed. Please, if you're gonna get a car and you're not putting a lot of money down, know there's something called gap insurance. You need gap insurance because if you total that car for any reason, the insurance company is going to pay the book value. So if you owe 30 and the book value is 20, the insurance is going to cut a check for 20. You will still owe that other 10. Okay. Again, know that your bank may offer it and your insurance company may offer it. So try them before you get the dealer's version of it.
Okay. Hey, can I ask another question that'll help people? I'm sorry, should you buy a car or should you lease a car?
That's a very good question as well. Understand, buying and leasing are two different things. Leasing, obviously, you're kind of locked in when it comes to mileage and the usage and the wear and tear of the car. If you have an at-home business, you get to write part of that off, which you know, on a lease. But leasing is not for everybody. And unfortunately, people misuse leasing again, like we spoke about, George. So you can afford $299, $399 a month. So rather than go get a leased Honda for $199 to save that extra money, now they move into a BMW 3. So
I thought you said a need and a want. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, now the want kicked in because you decided to lease it. You saw that payment was the same on a high-end car. Now you done jumped in. Oh, I can get a BMW. I can get a Mercedes. That's what they're leasing for. So again, you have to be careful walking that fine line. If you're going to lease, know that you want to take the car that you want and get a lower payment. That way, you can now save that the difference in that what that payment would have been. You can save that every month. Put it in the bank, put it on the side, put it in an investment account or whatever you want to do with it. And then at the end of the lease, you decide whether you want to buy that car, keep it, or you want to move into another car.
All right, everybody, type if you're over 40, write it down. If you're under 40, type it down. That's exactly how you do it. So we sit down and we decide. That's something that I do. Is I sometimes lease companies cars through my business, but if the payment, I'm just using the 400, like you said, or let's use 500 because it's a round number. 500, if you lease it, if you were to buy it, it'd be 800. So you lease it for 500, you take that 300 and you save it and invest it. If you guys remember stage three of, you know, doing things, save vesting. You save vest that $300 over that 5-year period. Then when you come back, that car, you make a decision right then and there based on technology. You say, hey, I would like to buy the car, but you already, and then there's a residual, I would like to explain residual value at the end, after I finish, but then they'll tell you when you lease a car, they tell you up front what you have to pay for it to walk away with it. And then you have the money to pay for it. And then you have a paid for car, but then also tax wise, when you had it through your business, you received those tax deductions. It gave you a tax advantage over the time. So that is a very specific strategy on how you purchase vehicles. And you illustrate that very well, Charles. So Charles,
and what happened? It's not for everyone because you got to know yourself. This takes a lot of discipline to do what
discipline need and want. I'm sorry, go ahead. Go.
And George just explained, right? Because you could say, I'm going to do this strategy, and then you get into the lease and then you don't save the amount. Now, all of the things that are not a positive outcome with lease will happen in your situation. The other thing I think a lot of times people don't really do the calculation of what the mileage means versus how you drive a car.
Correct.
And you will end up at the end over the mileage because you didn't really think about how little driving that is that the, you know, that you're being held to with the lease. So you got to know your patterns as well and actually calculate it out. Look at, one of the times that I leased, I knew it was my commuter car. So I know this car is going to the, you know, train station and back, maybe a little bit of driving on the weekend, but it's not going any long distances. So yes, I know I'll stay within the range.
Now, quick caveat to that. If you are leasing and you know you're going to do more mileage, you can pre-buy your mileage and it will be less. So you can get a 15 to 20,000 mile lease if you own a business, and it will be cheaper to buy it up front.
Gotcha. Yeah. So what happens at the end of the lease, Charles? What are your options?
At the lease, you can either buy it, believe it or not, if the car appreciates, you could actually sell it and make money if it appreciates.
Yeah.
I've seen that on a couple of Lexuses, where especially when the whole thing hit. That's why a lot of dealers were calling people to buy their cars, even though their leases weren't up, because the cars had went up so much in value because of the shortage of cars. They were like, we'll give you $10,000 more than you should have for the car, but we want your car now. So understand, depends on where you are. You know, you can move into the next car. Like George said, technology may have changed, or you just walk away from it. Sometimes there's a fee to walk away from it. That'll be on your contract. But understand, with the lease, they're going to go over that car with a fine tooth comb. So tires, any body damage, scratches, scrapes, the interior, they will charge you for it if you're not going into another car.
Yeah, I want to raise my hand to someone that happened to me on my most recent lease that I have right now, actually, that I'm finishing, is that it's worth more because it's a hybrid, and I didn't drive them that many miles on it, and that's why I want to keep it because the technology hasn't changed. So if you do that, I just feel like that was the best of all options because I still have all the options open to me, but I'm going to end up purchasing the car. But I have exercise some discipline and doing it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, you were talking about residuals. A residual is what they calculate the car should be worth at the end of 2 or 3 or 4 years, whatever the lease is calculated at. So that's a point where if the car is $50,000, they say it's a 50% residual, the car will be worth $25,000 at the end. That's where you get that, whether it will appreciate or depreciate. One of the worst cars for depreciation, I'm not picking on Maserati, but Maserati has such a hard depreciation rate that when the leases were coming back, I actually had a Bishop, his buyout was $48,000. And like you, he didn't use the car that much, George. The residual of the auction price, the cars were selling for $31,000 to $35,000. So he couldn't even buy his own car.
Right.
Unless he wanted to overpay.
Right. So, yeah. Wow. All right. So, I have another question, and then the next is this. Should someone, you know, you'd brought up about brokers and everything like that. Should somebody use a broker? Or how should someone consider using a broker to buy a car?
I am a broker, just so let people know. But one of the things about brokers is you have to use a reputable broker, because there's a difference between brokering to help the customer and brokering to make money. Some people broker, they don't really know what they're doing. They don't know the ins and outs of the car business. All they're doing is bringing a person to a dealership, Say, hey, I know this person. They want a car. You're going to give me a check.
Can you, before we continue, can you describe what a broker is?
Someone who will do the work for you, do the legwork for you, find the car, set up everything as far as pricing, help you get financing. That way, when you walk in, you basically do nothing but walk out with the car and just help the woman up in Ohio get a Cadillac Escalade, $100,000 vehicle. They came and picked it up, negotiated the deal, negotiated the rate, made sure the warranty wasn't overcharged. So they'll take you through everything step by step if they know what they're doing. So make sure you're going to use a broker, somebody who's reputable. The benefits to brokering is obviously saving tons of.
And you've walked her through the points, and they're getting the car that they like. So I see that.
Correct.
All right.
So it's taking the it's like having a person. I wish I had somebody who could dress me every day, pull out my outfit, have it all set up for me. With this way, I walk out. That's my outfit. You know, having a personal chef at home. You know, those little things that are just done for you. So you get a broker, and, you know, I brokered for professional athletes. I brokered for bishops. I brokered for pastors all over the country where they literally say, okay, Charles, you handle everything, but just have the car dropped off at my house.
Right.
So I was Carvana before Carvana.
Right. And then, Thomas, I want to go back to you with any other questions. I want to do a recap. Is that, Charles, I've watched you broker cars for people, and I've seen that where they don't have to worry about the hassle of everything, going on there arguing with nobody, doing all these things, going through all those. You deliver the car. And then also, if you remember, hey, everybody, you know when Chrysler 300s first came out and everything like that? Charles brokered, I don't know if you remember, Charles, you brokered a car for me. And the funny, the most interesting thing is, and I live in California, where I thought you get stuff, you see stuff early and everything like that. You delivered the exact same, the car I wanted, the color I wanted, everything, the price, everything was just all worked out. And it would just really streamline the process. I just want to tell you, I appreciate that. And in doing that. All right. Thomas, did you have any other questions that we wanted to ask Charles before we just did a little recap?
So I guess one question around the brokering side of things, is it for a particular, I guess, type of car, type of person? Like, who should consider using a broker?
Anybody buying a car who doesn't have the experience or knowledge about car person, spend extra $300 to $500 to pay someone to do all the work for you. Well worth it. You know, depends on the car. Obviously, as we go up in cars, I do charge a little more when you're looking at I've sold cars that were almost $500,000.
Wow. I didn't know.
Yes. So, but also, yeah. And then everybody, I want to just say this just in general. It's not like that and the Lemon Squad, the different things that you've been saying, Charles. Let me just say this to people who are looking at a broker or doing that. Is that it's actually kind of an investment. In other words, like if you can do all these things yourself, then yeah, that's one thing. But if you can have a professional help you do it, that's something that you want to consider in that area.
The Bible Thomas says wisdom is a principal thing in all thy getting, get understanding. So wisdom, if you got to pay for wisdom, get it whichever way you have to get it. If you don't know something, then get someone who does know it. You know, I will never go to my dentist and he tell me I have a cavity. And then I go say, okay, never mind, I'll take care of this. And I go to a hardware store and get a drill. Just not doing that. You know, you pay for professionalism. You know, you pay a professional to do what they do. But again, know who you're working with and make sure they have credibility and what they're doing, and that they're not locked into one dealership so that they can work multiple dealerships to get you the best.
Okay. Maybe we could do, as just before we close out, I guess, myths, things that people believe about the car buying process that are not actually true. What would you say, one or two of those?
Oh, a couple of myths of the car buying process. Every dealership is not out to rip you off. The car dealerships have the worst reputation because I guess they allow the best news stories. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, bad things are more newsworthy than good things. I wish they actually had a good news station where this is the good news for a change rather than the bad news. The other myth about car dealerships is that at the end of the day, it's a car. No, it's not, and it, you know, we are emotionally attached to them. We enjoy driving, but it's still a depreciating asset. So know what you're getting. You get excited about it. It's fun. I'm a car. George knows. I've had convertibles. I've had everything. At the end of the day, don't get caught up in the excitement. Get what you need until you can get what you want.
I like that. Get what you need until you can get what you want. George, you want to recap?
Yes. So, hey, this was such good information. And I was writing things down. I was typing things down, but I don't know if I got everything. But can we just, I just want to just do a recap so you guys understand. And then also, you may want to share this with people. And then also, you may want to listen to it again. But hey, what are some things that we learned? Number one, I'll start with this, is get financing. Let's start with the things we're going. I'm going to let you do the recap, Charles. But can we start off with get your financing before you go down there and do that. Charles, go ahead. Okay. What are some things that we went through today?
Get your financing. Get your loan before you go. Try credit unions, local banks. Know your credit score before you go. Save up for the car that you want. Save your down payment. Don't go in there with zero. I want to put zero down because then you're financing your taxes, your motor vehicles. So now you have the profit on the car. You have the tax, state tax. You have the motor vehicle. So you're already at a loss as soon as you drive off because the car depreciated as soon as you drive off the lot. Check for your insurance. Before you go, call in the VIN number to your insurance company. See how much the insurance is going to cost you before you purchase a car. You don't want to get there and get caught up because you really want the car now, but the insurance is $400 a month. So now you don't want to leave without the car, so you accept the high insurance rate rather than finding a car that's less. Okay? Know the cost of upkeep on the car. Know what it's going to cost to do oil changes, tire repairs, brakes, the important things in the car. We mentioned the Lemon Squad, a company that will go out and check out a used car for you. They cost about $100. They'll go straight to the dealership or to a private seller and look at the car, test drive the car. One more myth I want to go over, and this one's important. I know you see the advertisements on TV for Carfax. This is a good car. That's not a good car. Carfax is only as good as the information that it gets. I'm going to say that again. Carfax, you could have a car that was total. If it was never reported total by the insurance company or a police report, somebody could put that car back together and sell it to you, and it will not be on the Carfax. So, know that. I know George is looking at me like, whoa.
He's dropping a lot of jewelry, as we say on my podcast with Van Moody. This is really, really good information. Everybody in the chat, can you guys hype up Charles Gaskin in the chat? And then, hey, I look forward to you guys also. Let's give him a hand for doing an awesome job. Thomas, my co-hosting with me today and doing that. And then also, Charles, we'll also put some more information in the chat, but also how do people get a hold of you if they need more information?
My direct number, if you want to put it up, you can call me directly at the 914-906-1505. That's 914-906-1505. Text me. It's better to text me and I'll get back to you. That's the easiest way. Or email me at I'm old. I still have my AOL. And everybody say, you still have AOL? Yes, I still have AOL.
Right.
KFWC at AOL.com. That's Kingdom Family Worship Center. KFWC at AOL.com. Or Kentucky Fried Chicken with a W.
Gotcha. Cool. So, hey, we'll put that in the show notes. But, hey, yep. I want to thank any last statement you'd like to make, Thomas, before I conclude.
No, thanks a lot, Charles. This was really good. I think that we were talking about this earlier. When you look at your monthly budget, a lot of times the car is the thing that will come after mortgage and a couple of other big bills. So you being able to manage this part of it financially and get the right thing for your situation at that point in time allows you resources to do the other things that are your goals. on the flip side, if you get it wrong and you take on too much for what you actually needed, you are now constraining the other things that you can do financially in your life.
Well, this is so good. You guys, thank you so much for, first of all, joining us, Charles and Thomas today. And also thank all of you who are watching this and also listening to this. And also, please respond in the chat. And you know that I have other ones coming. You guys know you may be also part of my 21-day fast start challenge. Also, you go to my website. We have other items coming. You know, obviously, we do things on investments, taxes. We're showing you just how to live your best life and how to do it God's way. Look forward to seeing you on our next show episode.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody.